This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
D to D for Neil Pionk, and Winnipeg will slow it down to this 2-2 tie. Now Pionk will turn it north with some speed and across the line. Pionk will stop up, roll off the board, put it back toward the line for Liney. Makes a move. New side for Connor. Shot, he scores! Kyle Connor on an empty three-way passing play. Will bury it. In 4-on-4 hockey, Winnipeg regains the lead. It's 3-2 for the Jets, baby.
Kyle Connor with what proves to be the game-winning goal on Thursday night. The Jets win their home opener against the Minnesota Wild by a 5-2 margin, winning game 1 of 41 on home ice. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba, for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app. We say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We're with you for the next 3 hours. We're all over the Winnipeg Jets. The Jets, of course, in Chicago tonight to face the Blackhawks, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. And then they're back tomorrow evening to face the Pittsburgh Penguins for the second time in 5 nights. Without further ado, I say good morning to Dave Minuk. I say good morning to Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, nice to see you. I'm glad you were able to shovel yourselves out, dig yourselves out. Have you ever seen a storm like this in Winnipeg? This is just absolutely unbelievable what's happening outside.
What happened the last 2 days in this city and in this province? Like,
snowpocalypse. That's what happened.
Went on because
snowpocalypse or snowtober?
Whatever you want.
I don't think anybody called it snowtober because it's not the whole month.
Well, I don't know. Snowpocalypse is sort of cliche, I find. It's sort of boring, been used before. Snowtober was new. I liked snowtober better. In my house, it was snowtober.
Well, you know what, Drew? Let's make that the IC question of the day because I think I'm going to go with snowpocalypse.
Anyways, it's absolutely unbelievable. Like, I was out shoveling this morning, and so the top layer is snow.
Well, I'm just shocked, Dave, that Drew is shoveling.
Yeah.
I thought that you had, like, had people to do that. Like, you paid someone to do that.
There's no people. I am the people.
Oh, no, you have people.
I don't have people. I'm the people. It's snow and then a layer of ice and then just water underneath.
It's going to melt.
Of course it's going to melt.
That's the best part. This is kind of weather I hate because this is not something we normally get in Winnipeg, which is that wet snow. Mm-hmm. And this is very much where they get out east and it's brutal. And this is why it's just unlivable in my mind. I'd rather have that cold, dry stuff than this stuff. This is just brutal.
Yeah. The craziest part though, guys, is that it wasn't like, you know, you had one or two trees down. Like every single street had like 10 trees down. Like we have in our house, we have an apple tree and it's gone.
And the which wall?
It's not gone, but like half of it is basically like on my deck.
Where's my apple pie?
Well,
more importantly, as he no longer has to go to 7-Eleven now to get his apples.
That's right. He no longer has to buy his apples.
I was busy, Drew, looking after my two kids. I didn't have time to whip you up an apple pie.
No excuses.
I did bring some chocolate cake, though.
That's true. You did do that. So I'll give you a pass on that front. Let's get back to the Jets week that was, of course, with the 3 games since we were last on air last Sunday. They went on Sunday into Long Island and got handed to them by the Islanders pretty handily. Not a great performance on
the
that
Islanders'
Sunday.
Only victory, by the way.
The Islanders' only victory, exactly right. And then you thought, okay, entering Tuesday night's game in Pittsburgh, you heard again no Morrissey after he didn't play, and Kulikov had been back in Winnipeg celebrating the birth of his child. Congratulations to him, his wife, and his family on that new addition. And you're wondering, okay, this might be this is a pretty thin defense. This is a pretty random defense the Jets are going to be sporting against Sidney Crosby, no Malkin, but Sidney Crosby and the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Well, hold on, no Rust. No Bukestad.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a little bit of a Wilkes-Barre Scranton Penguins look to that Penguins lineup.
Fair enough. And there was a little look of Manitoba Moose to the Jets back end there as well. But, and then Crosby scores, you know, 12 seconds into the 30, game or 32. What? I know it wasn't exactly 12, but, and you're thinking, this might be a long night. And then after that, the Jets just absolutely, you know, dominated the Pittsburgh Penguins. I mean, I know what the stats were in the third period, but the Jets did a very good job in that third period, keeping everything to the outside. None of those were high danger chances. You know, Connor Hellebuck made the saves he needed to make on Tuesday night. And then they come home Thursday and, you know, it's a 2-all game. Then the offsetting penalties where people thought that only the Wild players should go. Oilers went as well. 4-on-4 hockey. Well, the Jets dominated that 4-on-4 hockey. They scored 2 goals. They end up winning the game 5-2. And all of a sudden, the Winnipeg Jets, you know, on a bit of a roll.
Yeah, there's no doubt that the game Thursday night, Drew, as you mentioned, was a huge win. you know, Jets breaking out offensively in the third period. I mean, you can't not mention that game and not talk about, you know, Patrick Laine's 4-point night and how good Connor Hellebuck was in that game. But, you know, going back to the game that you mentioned before that, the Pittsburgh game, to me, that was the more impressive game because exactly what you mentioned. When you're talking about that defense, I mean, we thought before the game, Dave, and, you know, you had this up on the site, we thought Josh Morrissey was going to be in that game just a few hours prior to puck drop. Obviously, you know, they kept him out because it was precautionary, and we know that he's back now, he's okay. But when you're putting that defense out, and I think Munsey brought this up on the broadcast, I'm pretty sure that Chris Letang has had like 500 more games of NHL experience than the entire Jets D-Corps combined.
Yeah.
Right? Like, so you're going up against a Pittsburgh team, even though they didn't have Evgeny Malkin, Nick Bjugstad, and all these other players. I mean, they still have Sidney Crosby. They still have Jake Guentzel, Chris Letang. I mean, that Pittsburgh Penguins team, by the way, did not look good. And, you know, I know Jim Rutherford has been trying to make a move for a defenseman, and, you know, Jack Johnson's name is brought up quite a bit. Eric Goodbranson's name is brought up quite a bit. I just don't know how big of a market there are for players like Jack Johnson and Eric Goodbranson. All due respect,
especially at the price tag that those guys carry,
and at this point in their careers, they're third pairing defensemen. I mean, I realize that Goodbranson and Johnson were both high draft picks, both first rounders, but they're, you know,
a decade ago, 15 years ago.
Well, and you know, Johnson is good buddies with Sidney Crosby and all that. But just, you know, you look at that Penguins team, and the way I looked at it, Dave, you don't have Evgeny Malkin due to injury, and obviously Phil Kessel was traded for Alex Galchenyuk. I barely noticed Galchenyuk in that game.
Well, and he went on IR right after the game. He's been battling a lower body injury, and so he obviously wasn't at 100%, and clearly they put him on IR too. He hasn't been healthy really at all this season, but you're right. I didn't notice him either. What impressed me the most about the game on Tuesday is that this is a Jets, so they enter the third period up 4-1, and they were able to shut it down. I mean, never mind what the stats say. Forget about the stats, because again, as I said, everything was to the outside. Everything was not a high danger chance. This Jets team last year, with a better defense, certainly a better defense on paper, wasn't able to shut anything down. Remember how many third period leads they gave up? I'm not saying that they're not going to give up a third period lead this season, or that one game it means that they're, you know, going to become a defensive stalwart in the third period. But that's the part about the game on Tuesday against the Penguins that impressed me the most, is how they were able to really sort of lock down a game they had in hand, similar to what they were able to do 2 years ago when they went to the Western Conference Final. They were very good at locking games down in the third period, Dave.
Well, I think what it is that you're going to have a better commitment from the entire team. I think it's a collective knowledge that you can't just rest on your laurels, and you have to get back into the zone and have to support the D. And I think it's one thing to know that, but it's another thing, especially with so many offensively minded players who are, you know, always quick to try and switch into that transition phase, that they now think, okay, we got to think defense first, because this is a 5-man effort now. This is no longer relying on Byfuglien and Morrissey and Trouba and Sherratt and Myers. So it's actually probably a really good thing. And again, I think this is part of what we've talked about throughout the summer, this idea that the Jets are going to have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder based on everybody kind of discounting them. But I also think these guys know that by virtue of the fact that they've got younger guys who don't have that level of experience, they, as a five-man unit, really know that they need to collectively be back and support each other. And I think that is what you're slowly seeing. And I think that's not something we saw a lot of last year. So I think that it's a lot more of an aggressive defense as opposed to a passive defense from the forwards.
Right. And I don't think that there's any doubt, guys, that the Jets are probably giving up more shots than they would like. But we expected that this year with the group of defensemen that they have. But, you know, when you're talking about that third period, Drew, I agree with you. I mean, you've still got a really inexperienced D-Corps. And, you know, I thought Neil Pionk has been very impressive, because at this point, Neil Pionk is one of the older players, right? Like, like Ville Heinola, like, he gets his first NHL goal, but his defensive play was just as impressive as, you know, what he's been able to do offensively, right? So I agree with you, Dave. And, you know, the group of defensemen that the Jets currently have isn't ideal. And obviously you'd like to have Buff in there, and you'd like to have Sammy Niku in there as well. But obviously, you know, Sammy Niku's not with the Jets right now, but
we'll talk about that later on in the program as well. The decision to send Sammy Niku Lemieux down to play for the Moose last night. The Moose losing last night to the Toronto Marlies in their home opener.
And you know what, guys, make no mistake. I mean, that win against Pittsburgh was huge because if you come back to Winnipeg and you've won one game out of your first four games, I mean, there's a big difference there. And it's not just, you know, 1-3 versus 2-2.
Psychologically.
It's kind of what it symbolizes, what it means psychologically, because, you know, the Jets have been thrown a lot here early on in the season. There's been a lot of adversity. And I'm talking about, you know, including the preseason. Mm-hmm. You know, Kyle Connor, Patrick Laine didn't sign until late in the preseason, didn't play in any preseason games. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, there hasn't been any rust for either Laine or Connor. But, you know, you're talking about Buff. That was unexpected.
Almost like you don't need 8 preseason games.
Well,
memo to the NHL.
Have 2 or 3. I mean, we've talked about this. Does there really need to be more than 2 or 3 or 4?
No. And the CBA mandates each team has to play a minimum of 6 exhibition games, but you certainly don't need 8.
No,
and we've talked about it before. Never going to change.
No, it's not.
Right? Because it's money, and then you have the opportunity to have these neutral site games, right, and all that. But
we don't need to rehash it. Yeah. But you're
just thank God the preseason is over, right? But but the point is, I mean, you know, a big storyline going into the season was, you know, how well are some of these younger defensemen going to play early on in the season, right? And we weren't even talking about Ville Heinola. I mean, we were talking about Sammy Niku and Tucker Poolman and Neil Pionk. Mm-hmm. You know, he's still a young defenseman at 24 years old, even though, you know, when you have Ville Heinola out there, I mean, he's not that young, right? He's 6 years older, but I think it's been really impressive, and that win was huge because that was something they were clearly able to build off of. And yeah, sure, the Wild had the early lead in that game and the game was tied in the third period. But, you know, Connor Hellebuck made a couple of big saves. And then after that, you know, Patrick Laine basically took over the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the Thursday effort, you know, when the third period started, and the Jets were certainly on their heels for the first, you know, 7-8 minutes of that third period until that 4-on-4 situation where it sort of shocked them back into reality. You're absolutely right. You know, Devan Dubnyk was very good for the Wild sort of earlier in the game. Mm-hmm. Connor Hellebuck was very good for the Jets early in that third period, maybe late in that second period. And then you sort of felt the Wild were going to tie it up when they did. And of course they did. But the Jets, you know, this is a Wild team, remember, that the Jets, I don't think they won a game against the Wild last season at all. They were swept. So, you know, you have.
Well, the Wild also don't have a win this year.
Right. Well, I mean, last year the Wild weren't that good either. So you have a in-division game, your home opener, it's 2-2, and you're, you know, halfway, give or take, through the third period. The Winnipeg Jets sort of were able to find that extra gear, mm-hmm. and were able to, you know, take the game to the Wild and really took over the game for the final 12 or 13 minutes. And again, you have another division game tonight, but this is a team that, despite the record only being 3-2, mm-hmm. you know, I think is feeling better than a 3-2 record based on some of the adversity they've overcome, based on some of their performance as of late. And, you know, there are certainly areas and aspects of the game that don't look exactly like they'd want. And Paul Maurice addresses that, and we'll play that audio a little bit later on in the show. But, you know, all in all, I think through the first 5 games of the season, you know, they sort of, you know, coaches always break things down in 5 game periods. I think the Jets are probably feeling okay for themselves through the first 5 games of the year, Dave.
Well, yeah, sorry, I'm just going to say I think they're feeling good because they easily could have been 1-4. I mean, you go back to
0-5. I mean,
well, you go back to the Devils game.
You were down 4-0 to the Devils,
right? So, I mean, you're happy that you're 3-2 because you've had all of these injuries and you had Dmitry Kulikov not being with the team. So that's why you're happy. But at the end of the day, you just want as many wins as you can early on in the season. So obviously the Jets would love to be 5-0. But the point is, with all of the adversity this team has faced early on the season, I mean, I think it's clear that Josh Morrissey is one of the most important players to this team, if not the most important player to the team, because of what's happened to the defense, like we talked about before. The right side of the Jets defense is completely new this year. So if anything, you know, I would say probably Morrissey is the most valuable player to this team. That's taking nothing away from guys like Blake Wheeler and Mark Scheifele and Patrick Laine, Kyle Connor. But I'm just saying, like, when Morrissey went out of that lineup and you were looking at who the Jets were putting out there, Dave, you're thinking, like, whoa, I mean, this is a real inexperienced decor. And obviously, the Jets got the job done and got the win against the Penguins. But, you know, when you're putting out, like an 18-year-old, and you're putting out, you know, Tucker Poolman, who only has, you know, 30 games of NHL experience, and, you know, Anthony Boteto is, you know, a 6 or 7 defenseman. I mean, it was scary to think what could have happened in that game. And luckily, the Jets got the win.
Well, I thought your tweet was interesting where you said on Tuesday, 6 of these defenseman, did not play for the Jets. Were not, you know, you took out the six guys who were playing regularly for the Jets last year, and they weren't the same six. And that's something we see in the AHL, but it's not something we often see in the NHL. You know, that is that kind of turnover.
That is
like when I saw Izzy's tweet, I was like, well, it's unbelievable to see that many guys.
You're like, you're fact checking the tweet. Is this right?
No, and it's true, but it's,
you should fact check every tweet, by the way, because they're usually
Are you saying
incorrect.
There's misinformation on Twitter that hallmark of credibility, Ezra? That's hard to believe.
Well, not when it's Izzy. But anyways, to that point, it's just, again, it just reiterates this idea that the Jets know that they can't rely just on their back end. They have to collectively, as a group, support each other. And I think that's something that maybe got lost a little bit last year. And I think it's something that these guys are embracing more and more. And they're not perfect at it yet, but I think it's just something that we're seeing. And the lucky thing is for the Jets that, again, you're not facing these teams that are doing, you know, like, real well right now. You know, you're facing 0-2 Chicago. Mm-hmm. You're facing, you know, a winless Minnesota team. You're facing, you know,
A Pittsburgh team that has
some injuries. Now, look, there's a lot of teams that have warts. So it's not a function of, like, the Jets are getting lucky. I mean, you have to beat these teams. There's still NHL teams. Still have Sidney Crosby in the lineup. You know, you still have dangerous players that you have to contend with. I'm just saying that the Jets are lucky in the sense that they're not going up against a Tampa right now or even a Toronto. So you've avoided some of the upper echelon teams. So you're going to make some hay. You're going to feel good about your game. You're going to build something collectively as a group, and then you can move forward.
Another guy that we haven't even mentioned that deserves a shout out, I thought, even though, you know, this is a player that could end up on waivers again, is Carl Dahlstrom. He ended up playing 24 minutes in that game, which I think was either second or third on the Jets after Morrissey and Pionk. And again, I'm not saying that Carl Dahlstrom has earned himself a job in the Jets top six, but, you know, that was only his second game of the year, I believe.
Mm-hmm. He's only played two. Yeah.
Right. So
he played the Islanders game and he played the Pittsburgh game.
I mean, to me, he was really solid. I mean, I don't think, you know, Chevy and the Jets, when they acquired him, I don't think they were expecting anything more than him kind of being a plug and play type of player. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, really impressive that he was playing those types of minutes, because he definitely was not playing those types of minutes on Chicago.
Adversity, you know, they say maybe adversity leads to some more focus. Right now, the Jets have dealt with their adversity. They still have some adversity to continue with, but they do seem to be a more focused group than they were at times last season. When we come back, we talk about Patrick Laine and his torrid start to the 2019 NHL season. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.
He's a guy that's has had a ton of success at a young age, and, you know, he's been a huge part of our team's success, and his determination so far this year has been outstanding. I mean, he's just battling on pucks, and typically when you have a guy his size and his skill set battling that hard, the puck's going to find him, and we all see what he can do in open space.
Winnipeg Jets captain Blake Wheeler post-game on Thursday talking about Patrick Laine. Laine, of course, with 4 points on Thursday night against the Minnesota Wild, coming off a 3-point effort against the Pittsburgh Penguins on Tuesday that very easily could have been another 4-point night had Scheifele's goal not been called back for an offside. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment of the show brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Bernstein's is proudly family-owned and operated and has been serving quality home-style food since 1985 for a hot, fresh breakfast starting at 6:30 a.m. weekdays and all day long and all weekend long. Visit Bernstein's at 1700 Cordon Avenue. That's in the Cordon Village Mall. Guys, Patrick Laine has obviously been off to an incredible start this season. Hockey is fun, blah, blah, blah. We know how he likes to give those quotes every now and then. And hockey was hard at times last year for Patrick Laine. We're seeing a different Patrick Laine right now. Do you think that what we're seeing, obviously not 2 points a game, but do you think what we're seeing is a sustainable Patrick Laine for the entirety of the season?
I don't think it's sustainable because you just mentioned he's not going to average.
Forget about the points, but the performance, the impact, the influence, the his ability to take over the game like we've been seeing, where he's morphing into this power forward, that will dominate opponents. Is that what we're now should expect to see?
Yes,
from Patrick Laine.
Yeah, absolutely. That's sustainable. I mean, he's the second overall pick. He's from obviously 2016, but he's a generational player. I mean, he is that talented. I mean, and that's why, you know, going back to last year when Patrick Laine was struggling for that long, right? Like, he wasn't struggling for, you know, a game or two. It was a pretty significant slump last year. There were several slumps. I mean, we all remember that. That was why it was so surprising, because you knew that Patrick Laine, he's an absolute freak. And I mean that in the best way. He is a player who possesses tools that other players just simply don't have and will never have. His shot is otherworldly, probably the best shot in the NHL right now. If it's not the best shot in the NHL right now, it is one of the best shots, and it will be eventually. And I think you could even make the argument he's got one of the best shots of all time already. Like, honestly, like, I mean, you ask anybody, and we've talked about this before, you ask GMs, coaches, players, you know, members of the media, everybody says the same thing. I mean, Laine has the ability to change a game with that shot, but he's not just about that shot. He's not just about goal scoring. And I realized there were a lot of Jets fans, you know, that were almost kind of, you know, kind of saying like, oh, I told you so. Look, Laine is not one dimensional. And they're right. He isn't one dimensional. At times last year, he was, though. And you can't deny that. So
at times last year, not only was he one dimensional, he was also invisible, which is hard to be when you're his size. There has not been a game this year, Dave, even games where he wasn't on the score sheet, where you haven't at least noticed him, where you haven't at least noticed his impact. And I know it's only five games, but it does seem like you have a player in Patrick Laine now entering his fourth year in the NHL who's beginning to, I guess, fully comprehend what it takes to be a pro and harness that skill set and impose his will on opponents.
Well, I think as he hit the nail on the head when he called him a generational player, I mean, that's the reason why. You know, when there was talk about, like, get rid of him because people were upset about the contract talk, I thought, how do you get rid of a player who's got that level of talent and is only scratching the surface and has done what he's done at his age? And, you know, the Jets PR put out a bunch of pregame notes for ahead of this game, and I thought, for Laine, he had 8 hits on Thursday, which was a career high. He had seven takeaways. And what's more interesting, I thought, or the most interesting, was the fact that of his 10 points, 9 of them are even strength.
5-on-5.
That's right. So for me, but the point is that for me, that is significant because Patrick Laine always did well on the power play.
Mm-hmm.
But now to be doing what he's doing at even strength is significant. And again, we're seeing what he is, which is a guy who's now able to keep up with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler and kind of get in. Like, that pass from Scheifele was next level. Like, you know, you could see Scheifele drawing the defense with him, mm-hmm. and then Laine getting into that perfect spot, and then Scheifele hitting him with that pass. I mean, that was impressive all around. I mean, the goal was spectacular, but
that was the second Jets goal on Thursday night for...
Yes, yeah. And so, but to me, it's just that he's doing all the things, like, he's engaged. And that is what you needed to see from Patrick Laine, was that physicality, that engagement. And again, it's not just what he's doing scoring goals. It's all the little things that he's doing, like forcing plays. Like, people are like, oh, well, you know, what did Laine do? He only got a secondary assist. I'm like, yeah, but what did he set up? He got into the zone. He forced the defenseman to create a turnover, went to the next Jets forward who set up the goal. But my point is that he's doing the things that are leading to goals, which is good for his team and good for the overall game.
Well, I think Jordan Greenway is still looking for his hockey pants because Patrick Laine absolutely undressed him. So when you're talking about, you know, what Laine is able to do, I think we all know what he's able to do, and we know that he has that playmaking element. Make no mistake, though. I mean, he's a goal scorer. Patrick Laine's bread and butter is his goal scoring. Can he set up plays? Absolutely. I mean, I agree with Dave. Like, the setup on that goal was incredible, but I think what is most important about how well Laine is playing right now is that he's playing that well on the top line where we've expected him to be for the last couple of years with Mark Scheifele and Blake Wheeler. And we weren't sure, guys, at the beginning of the season if Paul Maurice was going to break up Scheifele and Wheeler, right? And clearly, the way that line is playing right now, I mean, just pencil that in every game for the foreseeable future, right? So I think that's something, Drew, that is being... I mean, I lost a little bit in how well Laine is playing individually. It's that Laine and Scheifele together specifically, and Wheeler, mm-hmm. but Laine and Scheifele, because I agree, Dave, I mean, that pass by Scheifele, that's like Wayne Gretzky, Adam Oates type of stuff. Like, that is like, there aren't that many players in the NHL or any level that can make that type of pass in that type of situation.
You bait the defense over to you, and then you have a no-look, tape-to-tape pass for a one-timer. Now, the guy firing the one-timer happens to be, like, to your point, the best shooter in the game.
Right.
But, I mean, the fact that Scheifele is able to bait the defenseman, put the seam pass right where it needs to be without giving a hint that that pass was what he was thinking in his head.
Right now, let's go live on the.
We're not going live on the illegal curve. For the record, we have an opening for a new producer, though. That much I can tell you for sure.
Even Line
Mikey McIntyre is coming up in about 5 minutes.
Yeah. So. Even Line A said he didn't think that the pass was coming.
Yeah.
Which just goes to show you how good he is, thinking that that Scheifele was just going to dump it in. Then when he realized what was happening, still managed to get off that
kind of ball. Now that Scheifele and Line A have figured that out, though, I mean, that's really hard to stop. Like, I feel sorry for opposing teams because it's all about spacing, right? And we know that Patrick Laine now has figured that out. That's something that he maybe wasn't even able to figure out earlier on in the first year or two of his career. But when you're talking about, like, Laine's able to thread the needle like that, it's really tough to defend that. Like, what do you do? I mean, you can only take away so much space. Mm-hmm. But when you have that type of chemistry together, I mean, you see that with, Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point, that type of the way they're able to find each other. Mm-hmm. Or, back in the day, Nicholas Backstrom and Alex Ovechkin. Obviously, now it's Kuznetsov and Ovechkin. But the point is, I mean, that's what I would be scared of if I were opposing teams. Now that Laine's playing with Scheifele, again, that's something that we talked about all summer with all of the comments and, Laine wanting to be on the top line and all that. But to me, that's what's probably standing out to me, and the most important about Laine's start to the season is that him and Scheifele are clicking.
But to your point, though, Ezzie, I think what's very good for the Jets is, so Laine obviously didn't start the season with Scheifele and Wheeler. Ehlers did, and they had success, and Laine was with Connor and Kopp, and then they switched Ehlers and Laine. I think for Paul Maurice, when you can sort of mix and match those top six forwards a little bit more than you used to be able to, because you now have confidence in whomever is going to play up with Scheifele and Wheeler, be it Connor, be it Laine, be it Ehlers, are going to have a fair bit of success. So you now know that if it's not going well, if it's not going perfectly for a game or a couple periods, and you want to switch things up, you're putting guys together who do still have experience, and that they can play together. So I think that is a little more comfortable for Paul Maurice. You're no longer having to jam a square peg into a round hole sometimes when you're trying to put together the line blender.
I think it's almost like when you put anybody with Scheifele and Wheeler, they can play well, and their game can get to that next level. Now the key is,
but Laine can play well on that second line as well, is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
when he wasn't playing with Scheifele and Wheeler start the year.
And again, like I said, I think it's a function of, you're right, Drew. I think it's recognizing that there's, well, and that's one thing we've never said the Jets are lacking, is their offensive ability. I mean, mm-hmm. they've got so much in that regard in terms of the types of players that they have that can put the puck in the net. So that's really not, a big concern with Winnipeg is scoring goals. It's, of course, going to be preventing goals. But again, I agree with you. I think it's important to know that Laine can go, doesn't have to be on that top line. He can be on the second line if need be. But just seeing, to Ezzie's point, what that top line is able to produce right now, I mean, it's hard to see them not sticking together.
When we come back, Mike McIntyre of the Winnipeg Free Press joins us for more conversation regarding the Winnipeg Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can reach us here in studio via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. You can also reach us via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Winnipeg Free Press, we're pleased to welcome to the program Mike McIntyre. Mike's appearance on the show is brought to you by OtterBox, because when you need to throw your cell phone out of the press box in Pittsburgh, have it land safely, OtterBox is your only option.
That's, you guys landed a big sponsor. That's a huge development, guys. Congrats.
How did for those in the audience who don't know what I'm referencing, Mike was on the road trip, of course, the Jets 4-game road trip, and he was in Pittsburgh on Tuesday night and decided he would do an experiment involving throwing his cell phone out of the press box and to see if it would land safely. What happened then, Mike?
Well, so let me back up for a second and say that 75% of journalism is untangling cords. That is, they don't teach you that in journalism school, but that honestly is what we spend most of the time doing, whether it's headphone cords or laptop cords or charger cords. So I'm up in PPG Paints Arena. It's just over an hour before the game. I'm setting my laptop up. I'm going to plug it in, and my laptop charger cord is tangled, of course. So it's hard to kind of picture this, I guess, but I had my iPhone down on the table or on the ledge, but not like peering over the edge, just on the regular work area. And I went to grab my laptop charger, which was tangled, and didn't realize that the iPhone was right on top of it. And what ended up happening is like a catapult. I sort of, it launched it airborne right over the edge. And, of course I looked horrified as I watched it land on a couple of seats and then concrete. And yeah, so I rushed in. Thank goodness the rink was not open yet. They were actually just about to open the doors, because I can't even imagine if somebody had been in their seat, what that would have felt like to have a iPhone from about 50 feet come hurling down and bonk them in the head. But yeah, amazingly, not a scratch, not a dent, none the worse for wear. And yeah, way to go, OtterBox.
Is it a good iPhone, or were you looking for a replacement?
Well, people are going to accuse me of looking for a replacement, guys, because back in June, when I was in Toronto covering the NBA Finals for the Free Press, I actually left the very same iPhone. I left it behind in an Uber, and it took the better part of 6-7 hours before I was finally able to get it back. So people are going to accuse me of wanting to get a new phone, since I've now tried to abandon and tried to murder it in just a few months span.
Well, it's a good thing you're not on the road in Chicago tonight. You just keep your iPhone in your house, and you will be able to keep an eye on it. Mike McIntyre is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Now, let's talk about some hockey, Mike. Obviously, the Jets won their home opener on Thursday night against the Minnesota Wild, coming off of that road trip where they split the four games 2-2. You know, we said at the outset of the show that, you know, sure, their record's only 3-2, but this Jets team, given the adversity, given the changes on the blue line, given the absences on the blue line, I think they have to be feeling pretty good about themselves to have three wins in their first five games.
Well, they do, and especially when you look at some of the other underlying numbers, guys. I mean, the Jets are giving up, I think even Paul Maurice admitted yesterday, way too many shots, way too many scoring chances. They've got a very inexperienced blue line. The power play has been basically non-existent, right? They've got one goal in five games. So if you had said at the beginning of the season, just a couple weeks ago, that the Jets are going to be giving up close to 40 shots a game, they're going to have one power play goal through five, they play four of their first five on the road, they're going to miss Josh Morrissey for two of those five, what do you think their record's going to be? I don't know if anybody would have said 3-2. So in that sense, I think the Jets have maybe overachieved a little bit or surprised. But clearly there are some things that they're going to have to work on and clean up, because I don't know that this is all that sustainable to continue playing that way. The other thing, I guess, just as a word of caution, is it's so early, it's hard to say what level of competition have they faced yet. I mean, are the five teams that they played, have they faced a powerhouse? I don't think so. Have they faced a legitimate Stanley Cup contender? I don't know about that either. The competition is certainly going to get tougher, I think, as they go along. But all that being said, not trying to rain on the parade here, 3-2 is mighty impressive. And, you know, the Jets are doing a lot of really good things as well, and not the least of which is on the offensive attack. The power play aside, I mean, they are playing tremendous hockey at 5-on-5. And, you know, right at the top of that list is Patrick Laine. And there's a guy, right, who everybody used to say, well, he can only get his points on the power play. He's a visible 5-on-5. It's the complete opposite now. He's dominating 5-on-5 along with his two line mates. And it just shows, doesn't it, that a scorching top line and some good goaltending can really take you a long way in this league.
You know, Mike, in your answer, you mentioned the amount of shots the Jets are giving up, 38 shots against the Penguins, and then 40 shots a couple of nights against the Wild. And your colleague Jason Bell wrote about Connor Hellebuyck in today's Winnipeg Free Press. And obviously Hellebuyck was a huge part of the last two wins against Pittsburgh and Minnesota. And we know that, you know, Hellebuyck probably wasn't that happy that Lauren Brossoit got that start, you know, against the New York Islanders. But in your opinion, and we mentioned you were on the road trip, you were, you know, watching all four games in the building. Did you get the impression that, you know, Hellebuyck was really fired up and he had a chip on his shoulder in that game against Pittsburgh?
Absolutely. Talking to him on Monday at the Penguins practice facility, that would be so the morning after the Islander game, the afternoon actually is when they practice. So we got to Pittsburgh and Hellebuyck spoke, and absolutely I sensed a chip on his shoulder. You know, to me, it was pretty obvious. He wasn't very happy, and he felt like he should have got the start the night before, and that he was going to use that as, I mean, he flat out said, I'm going to use that as motivation. So, you know, maybe Paul Maurice pushed a button, but it seems to have worked, didn't it? And to me, I don't take any of this as a negative. I think this is the best case scenario. If you can have both goalies pushing each other, and not just pushing each other, but actually trying to steal the crease from each other, that to me, that's a good situation. That's way better than having two goalies not playing well, and you know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't kind of thing in terms of who gets the net. So I think, and we've seen it in the past, haven't we, that Connor Hellebuyck played some of his best hockey when it wasn't comfortable for him, when nothing was just given to him. And I don't know if we want a Connor Hellebuyck who just knows automatically, no matter what, he's getting 65 starts this year. That's not going to be the case. I mean, he's got to play well, and if he doesn't, there's another guy waiting to take his job who has a lot to play for, because unlike Connor Hellebuyck, Lauren Brossoit does not have a contract beyond this year. He doesn't have long-term security. And just like Connor Hellebuyck, Lauren Brossoit thinks that he's a really good goalie who deserves the opportunity. So to me, it's a win-win for the Jets. Yeah, it might be a little thorny at times with goalies. And let's face it, they have egos and they probably get a little bruised. But you know what? At the end of the day, it's about the team and about having team success. And I think that little bit of a fire that got lit under Connor Hellebuyck last weekend in New York helped very much propel him to a pretty good week.
You know, Mike, Brian Little is in on IR right now. Yesterday he at practice, he was in the non-contact uniform. But do you think when he comes back, he slots back into that second-line center role? And then the second part of the question is, do you think that Andrew Kopp would go back to the wing? And if that's the case, there's a third part. Is there going to be anybody happier to have Andrew Kopp on the wing than Adam Lowry?
Just ask him five questions while you're at it, Dave.
First part, when are they bringing the Jujubes back to the press box? That's the
Don't forget question. The ice cream bars.
Yeah, I didn't really like the candy selection the other night, guys. I got to be honest with you. Especially for a home opener. It was a bit disappointing. let me start with the other one, because that's a great question, Dave. To me, if there's one player right now on the Jets who is suffering because of the way the lines are constructed, it's Adam Lowry, who has been, I don't want to say invisible. He's still, you know, he's obviously doing some work on the penalty kill, and he's thrown, you know, he's playing physical. But this is not the Adam Lowry we're used to seeing. This is not the TLC version of Adam Lowry, because, let's face it, Gabriel Bourque and Mark Letestu are not Andrew Kopp and Brandon Tanev, and that line, I mean, Adam Lowry's had a couple games already this season where he's barely cracked like 12 minutes. And that's not ideal. And I don't know what you do with the lineup you have right now. I mean, unless they want to try Jack Rossovic at center, which, I don't know, to me, Rossovic's playing really well. I wouldn't totally be against giving him a look at that second-line center spot for a game even to see what he does. And then you could put Kopp back with Lowry. But I think the more likely scenario, guys, is what you just said, Dave, is that once Brian Little comes back, I think, and it may not happen his first game, maybe they ease Little into the lineup, and maybe he just goes on the wing with Adam Lowry, which I think would be a good thing, too. Mm-hmm. You know, Brian Little can play the wing, and maybe getting a guy like Little with Lowry, you know, helps them both and gives you a little more well-rounded sort of third line. I don't know if they play with Bork or with Letestu, or do you do something like that? Or do you move the Matthew Pro up? I don't know. But I do think eventually they're going to put Brian Little back in that second line center spot. And I know all the detractors of that decision are going to say, oh my goodness, here we go again. Keep in mind, Patrick Laine right now is not on that line. And I think a lot of the concern has been the Laine-Little chemistry or lack thereof. I don't think Patrick Laine is going anywhere anytime soon. So maybe let's see what Little can do with Connor and Ehlers. And then you could reunite at least two-thirds of TLC and bring in a third member, if you will, to see what could happen. And I mean, there's a number of combinations I wouldn't mind seeing with Lowry and Copkins. Moving to Matthew Pro, Mason Appleton, you know, or you could put Jack Olsevic there. And, you know, it's not maybe the traditional shutdown sort of trio, but we know that Patrick Laine at times played last year with those guys. And I think it really helped Patrick Laine's game. You know, maybe it could help a guy like Jack Rossovic become a better all-around player. So I do think, to answer your many questions, Dave, I think to start, Little probably goes on the wing with Lowry, at least for a game or two. But I do think at some point, and they go from there. And I do think that I think either one of those moves makes the Jets a little more deeper than they are right now. I'm not saying Brian Little is the savior, but I do think the Jets, as their lines are constructed right now, that Lowry line is not as relevant as you'd like a player like Adam Lowry to be. And I don't really think that's any fault of his. I just think that's who he's playing with. But that's about to change, in my opinion.
Mike McIntyre covers the Winnipeg Jets for the Winnipeg Free Press. Mike, thanks so much for joining us this morning. Keep safe in the midst of this weather and keep the iPhone close. Now you never know where you're going to need it again.
You bet. Thanks, guys. Anytime.
Take care, Mike. Thanks very much. When we come back, we discuss more about the Winnipeg Jets. Is this version of the Jets physical enough, especially given some of the losses in their lineup from last season? You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning, welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. This segment of the program brought to you by our friend Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center. Dr. Rikus and his team provide modern and comprehensive dental care for the entire family. To make an appointment today, visit lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. You know, one of the things that stood out to me on Thursday night in the Jets' victory over the Minnesota Wild is that the Wild were trying to physically intimidate the Winnipeg Jets. They're trying to impose their physicality on the Jets way more than we've seen in the first four games when they were playing in the East. And the East tends to not be quite as physical as the West and as the Central Division, certainly. So the question I have for you guys, given the absences of Dustin Byfuglien and Ben Chiarot and Jacob Trouba and Brandon Tanev, four guys who certainly played a physical style for the Winnipeg Jets the last number of years, is this version of the Winnipeg Jets, this current roster of the Winnipeg Jets, physical enough, or is that an area of concern that you would have?
Yeah, I love the physical brand of hockey, and there's definitely an appetite for that physical brand of hockey, and we know that when it comes around to the playoffs, you know, the physicality, I think, becomes more important. But, you know, it's such a hard thing to quantify, as you know, Drew, because, you know, the NHL has moved younger and younger and faster year after year. There's less fights. Mm-hmm. I mean, hitting and fighting, it has become less important aspect of the game over the years, and you can still have a very successful team and not be that physical. I mean, case in point, guys, the Pittsburgh Penguins. The Pittsburgh Penguins recently won back-to-back Stanley Cups. I mean, there were not that many physical players on the Pittsburgh Penguins. And when you're talking about the Penguins and why they won, I mean, you're talking about up the middle with Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and then you remember Nick Bonino was their third line center. But you're talking about scoring depth on the wings with Phil Kessel and Jake Guentzel and that fast puck moving D with Chris Letang, Justin Schultz. But the point is that you take the physicality of Dustin Byfuglien out of the lineup. You take out the physicality of a guy like Ben Chiarot or Brandon Tanev. I mean, Jacob Trouba.
That's all. I mean, well, right, those guys all hit. Those guys are all physical.
There's four significant players there that are out of the lineup. Now, are there players on the Jets that can play that physical game? Yes. Gabriel Bourque has impressed me with his physical play. I mean, he's a guy that I've seen play before, but he wasn't a big part of that Avalanche team last year, even though, you know, he played, I think, around 50 games. So Gabriel Bourque has been a guy that I think has added a little sandpaper. But the point is, how do you quantify that, Drew? What I'm trying to say is,
hold on.
All I'm going to say is, yes, I agree. I mean, guys like Jordan Greenway, Carson Soucy, these types of guys, even Matt Dumba, Ryan Suter, the top pair. I mean, those guys can be physical. And at times, yeah, I think they were winning the quote unquote physical aspect of the game. But the game isn't won based on how many hits a team has or how many big hits a team has. It's about who scores more goals. So yeah, the Wild were pushing the Jets around a little bit. I thought, you know, more so in the second period, you know, early part of the third period. But I mean, then, you know, the Patrick Laine, Mark Scheifele show took over and the Jets ended up winning the game. So I don't think anybody is going to argue, Drew, with your thesis about the Jets being less physical. I mean, the big buff is the big one. I mean, you know, you take him out of the lineup, out of any lineup, and you're just going to be less physical because he's one of the more physical players.
And less intimidating as well.
And that's definitely a I'm glad you mentioned that because that is still an aspect of hockey. That element being intimidating, that you know that when you go get the puck behind
the threat of physicality as much as the physicality
and
itself.
Look at the St. Louis Blues. I mean, the St. Louis Blues with guys like Patrick Maroon and you remember a guy like Zach Sanford. I mean, a guy like Zach Sanford was very effective in the Stanley Cup final for the Blues. And then you throw in, Colton Parayko, you know, a good puck moving defenseman, also big and, you know, physical and all that. So I think when you're talking about the physical part of hockey, I mean, that can be a part of games. It's obviously not as big of a part of hockey anymore, but I guess in a long roundabout way, I just don't think that because the Jets might be less physical this year, that necessarily means that doesn't necessarily translate into worse results. I think it means that they're probably going to have to change their style of play. And I think you've seen them change their style of play already. So that, I think, is what we're talking about here.
I thought you had something to say there. Sorry.
No, the only thing I would add to Ezzy's point is the games aren't won by how many hits you have. And to that idea, the Jets end up winning the game 5-2, right? Which is what really matters. And I think, you know, to your point, Drew, if you look at last year with all those physical players in the lineup, what happened with the Jets?
Well, I mean, they had some struggles at times during the season.
Right. So I'm just saying, like, so yeah, okay, you remove one aspect, but the point is that, you know, when we talk about, as he hit it on the head, the game is changing. It's about puck possession. It's about what you're doing with the puck. You know, I mean, sure, physicality can lead to some good things, but we see guys like Patrick Laine, even, who's a physical guy, can get engaged. Andrew Kopp can get engaged. Adam Lowry can get engaged. So these guys, they do have guys who have the presence of mind to get physically involved. Sure, you're not going to be intimidating teams, but at the end of the day, that really shouldn't have a huge factor on the game. You know, hitting is different. You have guys who can hit, but you don't sure have that bruiser that, if, you know, find Anthony Boteto, but like whether he should be in the lineup is another question. To me,
one we'll deal with in the second hour of the show.
Sure. So to me, it's a function of, you know, this is a team, to Ezzy's point, that's morphing into something that's different than what we saw last year. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But I mean, yeah, okay, they're different physically, but I don't think that's going to hurt them, at least in the regular season.
And that's what my point was. Like, when you look at playoff matchups, mm-hmm. the Jets and Predators from a couple of years ago, that was a physical war, that series. But you look at the Jets Blues first round series. I don't necessarily know physicality. Like, you go back to the 2 years again, Jets versus Wild. I mean, clearly the Jets were having their way. Dustin Byfuglien specifically were having their way with kind of the small, less physical Wild forwards, right? Mm-hmm. You remember those big hits on Mikko Koivu, and there were several big hits. But I guess that's what I'm saying. In a series where you're facing a team, you know, best of seven series, I think, you know, that will factor in more, and it can be situational. I mean, you have games like, look at the Vegas Golden Knights versus the San Jose Sharks, where it starts to get a little chippy. And, you know, I thought it did start to get a little chippy between the Jets and the Wild. But I guess, again, because the Jets don't have guys like Byfuglien, Sherratt, Tanev, I didn't think that was a factor. And that if they had more physical players, I don't think that would have necessarily helped them as much in the game. I think it was the fact that the Jets, like we talked about during the first segment, they found that second gear. You know, the game was tied. They needed a big goal, and, you know, they got that, from Patrick Laine. So, well, they got a couple of big goals from Patrick Laine, one being the empty netter, but, you know, it's something that I think is going to be interesting to watch, because that was a bigger part of the Jets' identity the last 2 years. You know, Buff, and the, you know, going back to what Dave said, I mean, guys like Adam Lowry, you know, guys like Gabriel Bork, a guy like Tucker Poolman is a big boy. He can throw some weight around, even though I don't know if you'd necessarily call him a physical defenseman. But the Jets do have, it's not like the Jets are going to be pushovers and they don't have guys that can lay a body check. But I guess the point is, you know, the Jets, I think, still can be a playoff team without as many quote unquote physical players.
When we come back, we shift our focus to the Jets opponent tonight, the Chicago Blackhawks. Jimmy Greenfield of the Chicago Tribune joins us for the perspective from the team from the Windy City. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Dave Minuk and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can reach us in studio via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. Of course, you can also reach us via Twitter. Send your tweets to @IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From the Chicago Tribune, Jimmy Greenfield joins us now from Chicago Blackhawks Morning Skate. Jimmy, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Good morning.
Jimmy, Robin Leonard gets his first start in net tonight for the Blackhawks. The first two games went to Corey Crawford. Of course, one of those games being overseas in Prague, where the Blackhawks started the season. I was a little surprised that Crawford started over Leonard to begin. Were you surprised by that? I thought Leonard, given that he gets the one-year contract, he gets the big money, and Crawford's injury concerns the last number of years. Were you surprised that Leonard hasn't started the first two games?
No, I think that, you know, Crawford's pedigree with the Blackhawks is pretty solid, you know, with winning the Cups. And you know, they're being set up to be co-equal starters, essentially. So it wasn't a big surprise for Crawford to start in Prague, a slight surprise that he started the home opener. But again, that's, you know, the kind of game you want to give to a guy who's kind of earned it over the years. But, you know, he hasn't played great. He's been okay. And now Leonard gets a shot, and we'll see where they go from here. You know, they've been pretty clear that both goalies are going to play a lot. And they'll go with the hot hand. And it's just a matter of where they go from this point.
Jimmy, you mentioned yesterday the first couple of games, you know, Johnny Toews and Patrick Kane were both together, and, you know, Kane had 4 points, but Jonathan Toews, I think you would agree, has struggled the first couple of games. And now Jeremy Colliton has switched up the lines. It's going to be Dylan Strome between Andrew Shaw and Patrick Kane, and then you're going to have Jonathan Toews between Alex DeBrincat and Drake Caggiula. Where does this leave Alex Nylander? Because I think a lot of Hawks fans were pretty excited when Alex Nylander got that nice goal in Prague, but it looks like now he might find himself on the fourth line.
It looks like he might even be a healthy scratch. You know, we'll find out in a little bit, but he's the kind of guy who, it seems like if he doesn't have a spot on the top two lines, he doesn't really have a spot. You're not going to put him on the fourth line. He's not a digger. He's not really a checking line kind of guy. And the third line is set. The third line was their best line against the Sharks. So we'll see in a little bit. But if the top two lines work tonight, and Nylander is out, and Brendan Perlini is going to get his first chance in the fourth line, he might be sitting out for a little while. It's a rough situation. You're right. That first goal was really exciting. He had a pretty good camp. He had a great first game. He had a really, really bad second game. But if he's somebody who can't crack the lineup, and Henry Yokiharyu is playing every day for the Sabres, that trade could quickly look pretty bad.
You know, Jimmy, just sticking with Alex Nylander, he's obviously, you know, a former first-round pick of the Sabres. As you mentioned, they acquired him for Henry Yokiharyu, but is it because, as you mentioned, that Nylander was so bad in that second game, or is it more so to get Brendan Perlini in the lineup? Because something to me doesn't seem to really be adding up if he's going from, you know, the top line to the press box.
I don't think it's about Perlini as much as it is about wanting to get those first two lines working. They were not good in the first two games. Portions of it. The first period of both games are really good. Second, third period, in particular against the Sharks, they just didn't get much done. Taves and Kane together didn't work. Perlini is going to get his shot here and there. I don't think he's going to sit the whole season. You can't send him down because he'll have to go through waivers. I don't think he'll make it through. It's one of these situations where I think it's about sending a message to Nylander. You can't take games off. That's what it looks like to me. And for whatever would happen, the second game he was not present. He had hit a big role in the Sharks' fifth goal getting scored, the game winner. He didn't pick up his man. He looked like he was kind of lazy in the defensive zone. And, you know, Colleton, for better or worse, is going to make that a point to drive home immediately.
No, Jimmy, how, you know, third overall pick Kirby Dach is with the Hawks. How likely is it that he's going to stay with the Hawks for the season? Or do you think he'll head back to junior at some point?
We don't know that yet because he hasn't played. I think they'd like him to be up here as long as they can. You know, he's practicing with the team. He appears to be recovered. They're saying that they want him to be, as ready as possible before he gets his first game. The thing about Saskatoon is he's not going to benefit from going back there. So if they can avoid that, they will. I don't think they mind burning the first year, but they're going to wait as long as they can to get him in the lineup. And then maybe they're not going to give him the 9 games in consecutive. Maybe they'll give him a few games here and there. But I think they would like to see him stay, obviously play well. But the goal is to keep him up here and not have him go to Saskatoon and kind of, waste a year. But I don't think they expect him to get much out of playing against that level of competition again.
Jimmy Greenfield's our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Jimmy is, of course, with the Chicago Tribune. The Jets in Chicago tonight to face the Blackhawks, the first of a back-to-back situation. The Jets home to face the Penguins tomorrow evening. Jimmy, Erik Gustafsson, comes 60 points last year for the Blackhawks, sort of out of nowhere. This is a guy who was a fourth-round pick of the Oilers, 7 years ago. What is Erik Gustafsson as a defenseman for this Blackhawks? Is he one-dimensional offense? I mean, 60 points is, getting up there in terms of elite offensive defenseman in the NHL.
I think at this point, you kind of got to say he is what he is. Last year was his breakout season offensively. He's had a long time to improve defensively. It hasn't really happened. Hasn't happened so far this season in the brief time the Hawks have played. His offensive skills are there. It's an important season for him. His contract is up. He's a USA at the end of the year. If the Hawks continue to play poorly and are out of the race, he's certainly someone who's going to get dealt by the trade deadline. It doesn't look like he's a guy they're going to at least give big money to at the end of the season. Maybe if somehow they can get him on a better deal. But this is a guy who you keep on wondering what it takes to get him to play better defensively, and it may just not be there. He's 27 years old. He's not a kid. He's had a long time to get to improve, and it just hasn't happened yet.
Jimmy, just going back to, we were talking about the line combinations. Jonathan Taves is going to be between Alex DeBrincat and Drake Caggiula. We haven't had you on the show since last year, since Alex DeBrincat signed that 3-year contract. What did you think of that contract? And when you're talking about DeBrincat, obviously he had, the great season last year, and there's no reason to believe that he wouldn't, because he's was a prolific goal scorer in the Ontario Hockey League with Dylan Strome. But how do you think he's going to manage the expectations now that, teams aren't going to be, caught by surprise by him, and he's established himself as such an excellent NHL goal scorer?
He's about as chill dude as you're going to find in the NHL. He's low-key. He's not selfish. I think the deal he signed for 6.4 was completely consistent with his personality. He didn't want to go to next season and have it get an, you know, have be a factor in the off season. And he's to score 69 goals in two seasons, 28 and then 41. You know, you don't do that unless you're pretty talented. And I think he's going to continue to play well. It certainly helps the Hawks with their cost certainty for the next few years. And I think it also helps them when they try to sign Dylan Strome sometime during the season, who I think will also do the same kind of bridge deal, or certainly, you know, give the Hawks a deal that they can live with. So it was good for him. I think it's good for DeBrinket, or good for the Hawks. It just kind of quickly happened right before the Prague game. And the way they rolled it out just kind of showed that it was going to happen all along. So I think it was a good deal for everybody.
You know, Jimmy, a couple of days ago in the Tribune, you wrote, is it a rebuild or is this an extension of the dynasty in Chicago? So what is the answer?
It's more of a rebuild, I think. You know, you've got the core, but the core guys are Kane and Taves are obviously producing. Keith and Seabrook are no longer the top pairing guys they used to be, and Crawford might be in his final season in the NHL. So it's more rebuild than core. They really didn't like the word rebuild last year. I think they used the word regroup or something, but it's far more about taking these new guys and falling into the number three pick and adding him to the group. And there's certainly a connection to those cup years as long as Kane and Taves are here, but it feels different. It doesn't feel like they're building off of what they used to have. They're trying to figure out what they are now, and they don't know yet. That's what this year is supposed to be about. But again, they just don't know.
Jimmy, you wrote about this in yesterday's Chicago Tribune, which I found was interesting, and I still think it's amazing that the Hawks have only played two games, considering the Jets have already played five, and there are other teams that have also played five games. But you wrote about how the Dominic Kubalik, David Kampf, Brandon Saad line was actually the most impressive forward line for the Hawks, and you know that would catch a lot of people by surprise when you have so many talented players in the top six. Is that line a line that you're going to be looking for in tonight's game against the Jets, in a game that, you know, we could end up getting a little bit chippy? We know that the Jets and Hawks, you know, have gone to war many times over the years in that central division.
Yeah, that I think if the Taves and Kane lines weren't broken up, there'd be a lot more attention to that third line, but there will still be plenty of attention on them just to see if they can do what they've done the last couple of games. Kubalik has looked really good. You know, Kampf is not a dynamic center, but they've all played together really well, and Brandon Saad has been consistent, and that's what they've been looking for. You know, one other issue with Saad is he's had a hard time getting on the ice. They've only played 12 to 14 minutes a game, so I think Jeremy Colliton is looking to get them more ice time, but more importantly, is they want to see how Taves and DeBrincat play together, and then Kane and Strome and those two lines. It's going to be, you know, this is an important game for the Hawks. Believe it or not, it's third game of the season. It's a pretty important game.
You mentioned, Jimmy, that it is the third game of the season, only the third game for the season. We know they went to Prague to start the year. You know, hindsight being 2020, you know, in the organization, do they really enjoy that trip, or is that trip sort of more of an inconvenience in how it sort of has screwed up the start to the season?
Well, I think they tried to chalk it up to it was helpful for their chemistry, and with a young team and a lot of new players, it probably did, but it was tiresome. You know, the jet lag was certainly an issue. They went there. They've only played one game, one NHL game at least. So they're not going to use it as an excuse, and I don't think it is. They had 6 days between games upon getting back, and the jet lag isn't terrible upon the return. I think they just need to start playing more games and figure out who they are, because the Prague game, I don't even think they felt like was their season opener. I think they felt like it was a couple nights ago. And then, again, which puts, you know, more importance on tonight's game, and then they play again in a couple days. And, you know, they don't go on the road for another 2 weeks. So they have this period where they need to get some wins and get some points in the standings before they hit the road again, because they could fall really far behind quickly if they don't get their act together.
Jimmy Greenfield covers the Chicago Blackhawks for the Chicago Tribune. The Jets and the Blackhawks tonight, 6 o'clock puck drop here on TSN Radio 1290. Jimmy, appreciate your time and insight. Thanks so much for joining us this morning.
My pleasure, guys. Thanks.
Take care, Jimmy. We'll talk to you again real soon. When we come back, we preview the Jets and Blackhawks. We also preview tomorrow evening's Jets and Penguins game. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
That'll do it. Winnipeg wins it tonight for the first time in 19 tries in the great city of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And they do so convincingly with a 4-1 final over the Pittsburgh Penguins.
That was from Tuesday night's Jets victory in Pittsburgh. The rematch, of course, goes tomorrow night back here in Winnipeg. But before that, the Jets and the Blackhawks tonight from Chicago. Certainly a busy weekend for the Winnipeg Jets. Back-to-back games. Back-to-back games for the Penguins as well. The Penguins are in Minnesota tonight for the Wild home opener, and then we'll fly to Winnipeg. So the Jets and the Penguins will probably pass each other in the airport around 2 a.m., 1 a.m. Central time, local time, later on this evening. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hawk. Hockey Show Saturday morning. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuke, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. This segment of the show brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction for all your real estate needs. Come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Jets and the Hawks, like I said, 6 o'clock tonight, a game you can hear live on TSN Radio 1290. You know, another divisional game for the Winnipeg Jets, and divisional games, you know.
Yeah, another divisional game, 2 of 17.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's only two in 11 more games.
Are the Jets in the Eastern Conference?
You know, I don't mind it. We talked about this last year. Front load your schedule.
Yes.
With teams from the other conference, yeah, so that the games later in the year
actually have
more meaning, where you play against Central Division teams, you play
it's
against
pretty ridiculous
Pacific
though. Like
teams.
I really don't
the
care.
The CFL does that. The CFL right. does a great job with that. I mean, you look with the exception of today between the Jets and between the Bombers and the Owls. The Bombers finished with Calgary twice. You had last night the Stamps sure. and the Riders. You know, the Eskimos play the Riders a couple times again. Backload your schedule with divisional matchups because they're more significant. Play those later on in the schedule. Of course, tonight, the Jets, like I said, second 2 of 17 to start or whatever it is. Jets go on the road to Chicago, and another important game for a Jets team that is feeling good about themselves, having won their last two games against a Blackhawks team that, you know, struggling a little bit to start the year. The whole road trip is just bizarre timing for me. I think it sort of gets your season off to a bit of you start and then you take this big gap and then you come back and you play a game. It's all bizarre, I think, starting the season with one game overseas. Why not play both games overseas? That
they should have played at least a couple.
Or none.
Well, I mean,
or have them, like you said, Drew, have them towards the end of the year or have them in the middle part of the year.
Well, like when the Jets went to Finland, was that last year?
Yeah, it was
so it was in November. They at least started their season. They had gotten into a bit of the flow of their season, and then they went and played two games overseas. It's crazy to me that you send them to Prague to play one regular season game. You know, the Jets, you know, to a man, all said that the trip, they enjoyed the trip, but they had already sort of gotten into the groove of the season. You're geared up. You're excited. You're ready to go. You want to play hockey, and then you start by traveling and you play one game and two games in the first 2 weeks.
No, absolutely. The 5 days off, I think, is something that coaches, players, everybody doesn't like.
Yeah.
You want it when you start the season, you want to start the season. You want to have a game every 2 days or, you know, maybe, you know, you have a 3 day break, but going over to Prague, having the 5 days off, I agree. And obviously you have to have some time off. You can't have a game, you know, 2 days later, but I'm with you. Actually, you know, even though, you know, we disagree a lot.
Yeah.
When it comes to the NHL schedule, I'm usually on the same page as you because we know that there's going to be quirks in every team's schedule. It's weird going back to only having two games against Central Division teams in the first 17. But again, you know, getting back to, you know, tonight's game versus the Hawks, I think this is, you know, there's a lot of intrigue surrounding this game because, you know, we talked to Jimmy Greenfield about this, you know, last segment. I mean, the Hawks have got off to an 0-2 start and, you know, it's only two games. But when you're talking about this Hawks team, I mean, you know that, Dave, they don't want to fall behind the rest of the pack in the Central Division. So even though it's only game 3 for them, they're going to be a pretty desperate team. So the Jets are going into Chicago for this kind of bizarre one-game road trip and then coming back, you know, for tomorrow's game at home against the Penguins. But you know that the Hawks are going to be motivated here.
Well, I'm intrigued to see Robin Lehner starting his first game for the Blackhawks. Leonard last year, we know, was terrific for the Islanders. Mm-hmm. But what did the Islanders preach more than anything else last season?
Defense.
So now you're going to see Robin Leonard in a different scenario. You're going to see him playing against a behind a Blackhawks defense, which, you know, isn't as good as the Islanders defense was last year. And their whole team defensive structure isn't as good as Barry Trotz's New York Islanders defensive structure.
And Drew, we should mention, sorry to cut you off, that Calvin DeHaan might make his season debut. He hasn't played yet. So there's a chance.
Acquired him from the Hurricanes in the offseason. Right. You know, I'm intrigued to see Robin Leonard, you know, in his first game for the Blackhawks behind a different defensive structure, a different defensive system. If you're wondering about the Jets and lineup changes and things of that nature, no morning skate for the Jets today. So we won't hear from Jets head coach Paul Maurice until about 3:30 this afternoon. I have to take that to mean that, I mean, there probably won't be any lineup changes. Not that we were expecting any. You know, they skated yesterday. They had practice yesterday. The lines seemed pretty set.
I wonder if any of that has to do with any type of travel delays, because, I mean,
I haven't heard anything. I mean, it seems like they were able to get out last night and everything else. We know they were able to get out, obviously. You didn't hear about any, you know, tremendous impact or tremendous delays to the Jets. But, you know, they decided to, you know, cancel morning skate today, which, you know, It was scheduled, but Paul Maurice himself said that they're probably going to do that more often, or it's going to be an option more often. So the Jets, no morning skate.
Does back-to-back games have any impact on that as well, right?
I would assume that also has a big factor. They certainly won't skate tomorrow ahead of their game against the Penguins. But this one in division against the Blackhawks team that's still trying to find its legs, I think the Jets might be seeing a Chicago team that might be a little vulnerable right now, especially the Jets. You know, they're
vulnerable, Drew, but hungry. I mean,
definitely hungry.
You definitely don't want to start. No team wants to start the season 0-3.
Yeah.
I mean, period, right? And, you know, when you talk about, you know, this Hawks team, I mean, we know that they are desperate to get back into the playoffs. You don't acquire Robin Leonard and make the trades that they did unless they were, like, the rebuild to me is over. I mean, it was a retool for the Chicago Blackhawks. When you've got, you know, Johnny Taves, Dave and Patrick Kane and Duncan Keith, Brent Seabrook, I mean, there's no time for a rebuild. You're paying those guys too much money. The window to win is now. Now, have they done enough to get back into the playoffs? I mean, your guess is as good as mine, because I don't think they're better than the Blues, the Jets, or the Predators, and I would probably say that, you know, the Avalanche and the Stars on paper are a better team. So the Hawks, I think, are a long shot to make the playoffs, but, you know, they need this win against the Jets. They should be the more desperate team.
Yeah, and I think if you're Winnipeg, you're thinking to yourself, well, you have an 8-point you know, edge on Chicago, and that's not a bad thing. Obviously, they have games in hand that they've played, so Chicago would have games in hand on Winnipeg, of course. But, you know, you're always looking, especially like you said, you only have two Central Division games. You got to win these games. These are absolutely critical. It was a critical win against Minnesota on Thursday, and it'll be a critical game against Chicago. You've got a Pittsburgh team that's, again, you know, you're looking to take advantage of what's happening with them and the injuries they've suffered. So you're playing a desperate Chicago team, but the reality is you're a desperate team. Again, we've talked about this. This isn't a Jets team that's firing on all cylinders. You know, offensively, we know they're a good team, but this is a team that needs to collectively have another real solid effort tonight in Chicago. So I'm really expecting the Jets to play a little desperate too, because they have, you know, you can't rest on your laurels, and they know how important taking advantage of these quote lesser teams is. You can't, because we know they're going to get into a heavier schedule playing the contenders. And right now, when you're not playing, when you're playing the lesser thans in the NHL, you have to take advantage. You can't sit back and say, we're better than Chicago, because sure you are on paper, but at the end of the day, it's the NHL. Any team can beat any team on any given night.
And you know, just going back to, you know, that idea of, you know, Robin Leonard not playing in front of the same type of defense as he was in Long Island. And I think you make a really good point, Drew, because I think that group of defensemen, we talked to Andrew Gross about it on last week's show. Mm-hmm. It's a very underrated group. Like, to me, Ryan Pulock of Grandview, Manitoba is one of the most underrated defensemen in the NHL right now. And, you know, a guy like Devon Taves, also a really good defenseman. You know, when you think of the Islanders, you think of Nick Leddy, right? Like, you think of Ryan Pulock maybe because he was a first round pick. But, you know, this Chicago Blackhawks defense and team, it's not just the defenseman, but they've given up 9 goals in the first 2 games. I mean, and that's unacceptable. And Jeremy Calton was talking about that this week. I mean, the Blackhawks have to be better in front of their goaltender. But, you know, I agree, Dave. I don't expect the Jets to, you know, come out, you know, slow and not be motivated and desperate. But, you know, this is the type of game that, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if you're going to see a lot of goals, because even though you've got a couple of good goaltenders in Hellebuck, Hellebuck and Leonard, I mean, both teams' defense are a work in progress right now.
official word now from the Blackhawks. Alex Nylander, a healthy scratch for tonight. Brendan Perlini is in. Robin Lehner in net as well for the Blackhawks, as we mentioned before. Jimmy Greenfield just tweeting that at us as well from Chicago. So that's the latest from the Blackhawks' perspective. When we come back, we'll talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins. They're in town tomorrow night to face the Jets. Matt Wentzel from the Pittsburgh Post-Gazette joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on your home of the Jets, TSN Radio, 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.